Hello, everybody, and welcome to DeathDoorProd.com Video Games Podcast. As always, this podcast is brought to you by a fuck ton of sponsors, but today we are brought to you by Audible. With over 100,000 audiobooks, including a bunch of New York Times bestsellers, Audible is your one-stop shop for all your audio electronic literature needs. Go to audibletrial.com/deathstoreprods to sign up for a free one-month trial and get yourself a free audiobook. That is audibletrial.com/deathstoreprods. There's a link at the bottom of the page or the banner on the site for Audible. Well, we don't have books or anything. We do have clothing and stuff. So head over to deathstoreprods.com/store and check out some of our stuff. As always, we are accepting new design ideas and art and such if you have it and would like to send us stuff. If you do want to send us stuff, please send them to bovion@deathstoreprods.com or post them in the t-shirt design thread in the forums. If you submit art and we like it, we use it, we'll be able to pay you based on how well the products are put on sale. If you have a design idea and we use it, unfortunately, we won't be able to pay you because, you know, it's business stuff, but we can't credit you. So sorry about that. Yes, again, that is deathstoreprods.com/store. If you have some stuff to submit, send it to bovion@deathstoreprods.com or the t-shirt design thread in the forums. Also, it is the time of year again. Death Store Prods is doing Extra Life. For those who don't know, Extra Life is an annual video game charity. This year, it'll be running on November 2nd from 8 a.m. to 8 a.m., or if you can't do it that day, whatever you can. And it is an attempt to try to raise money for Children's Miracle Network hospitals in our area. This year, Death Store Prods will be playing for the Sick Kids Foundation in Toronto. So please, if you're able to donate, then go to deathstoreprods.com/extra-life. That's deathstoreprods.com/extra-life. There's a big link at the bottom of the page. And donate. All donations are tax deductible, and all proceeds go directly to hospitals we're supporting. If you can't donate, then please join the team and help us fundraise. Anything you guys can do will help, and it'll be greatly appreciated by everyone involved. So please, it's deathstoreprods.com/extra-life. I'm your host, The Dead Man, and I'm incredibly tired. Join me today as Bovion.
Howdy.
He's presumably less tired. Yeah, what have you been playing recently, Bovion?
All right, I do have a few things today. Let me just try and freaking remember what they are. Okay, they're all on Steam, so I'm going to look that up. I feel like there might be something non-Steam, but we'll get to those if I remember them.
See, this is why you need a notebook to write stuff down in.
Yeah, I never actually remember to write things. So I guess starting things off, I played some Warframe.
Ah, yes, Warframe. Myself and Punchatron from the anime podcast, I've been playing this quite a bit. What do you think of it?
I would probably enjoy it more if my internet didn't suck. Whenever I play online with people, they're doing everything and I'm just running around like, where am I? Why can't I move? And I feel like I don't contribute. It's not like my team fails because I don't contribute. It's just like I'm on really early missions. So like I'm just doing nothing and the mission just does itself.
Yeah, I mean, it always sucks when you're like in one of these team-based games and you just have like a shitty internet connection.
Yeah, I do all right with stuff like League of Legends, but this, it's a bit more fast-paced, so the lag is a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
I also might need to fix my video settings in that game. I'll have to try that out.
Okay.
Other than that, what else? Shit ton of Minecraft. Shatter. I started playing Shatter.
Yes, Shatter. Breakaway with an awesome soundtrack. What do you think of it?
I was about to compliment the soundtrack. It is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the few games where I was actually thinking of like actually buying the soundtrack.
I got it with a Humble Indie Bundle.
I probably did too. I just don't remember it. I also probably don't have the link for it anymore.
I might. So I'll see if I can get the soundtrack. Because yeah, this game has a fucking amazing soundtrack. Like, if you're looking for good gaming music in general, and you can get the soundtrack to Shatter, get that, because that is what I would game to.
And failing that, get the soundtrack to Hotline Miami. That is fantastic.
I haven't played Hotline Miami, so I can't comment on
it. It is so good! It's so good!
You're making me want this indie bundle so much.
Yeah, Humble Indie Bundle 8 available now. Beat the average. Beat the average, though.
I can't afford to beat the average.
I think the average is like $5.
Yeah, I really can't afford anything right now. Although I did just find out I have more money than I was expecting because I actually have a job over the summer. Yay!
No. Yay, income.
Income is good.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You technically have an income, kind of. Anyways, off that. But yeah, as someone who played a lot of Arkanoid as a kid, I fucking love Shatter. Because it's like that, plus all the gameplay mechanics that would make it cool.
Yeah, I didn't exactly play a lot of those games growing up, but I do play them, and you know, they are fun games. And this one, like, it's a really great one. It's taking like the ideas of like your Arkanoid or your Breakout and moving them in, taking them in really interesting ways, like having the area like switch the switch the perspective of how things go, like turn it into a circle, give you the ability to like manipulate the ball in motion.
Yeah, the ability to manipulate it and seeing where it's going to go both seem like things that would make it too easy if you are a classic Arkanoid player, but it doesn't because it's balanced very well. Plus, when they throw in challenges like making it circular and the fact that blocks can fall and hit you.
Yes. Adding physics to the blocks is a really great addition.
Yeah, and like, I'm the worst for, like, I know I can use my shield and just, you know, destroy the block or just let it fall around me and be fine. But part of me's like, I want the fragments. I want the score. I've got to push that motherfucker back in there. So I go and I use my push ability, and it usually ends up with my thing getting hit and my ball falling.
Yeah, so people out there don't know, you're able to manipulate the ball and like the blocks in the environment by pushing and pulling, basically sucking and blowing. Your paddle is basically a giant fan, or has a giant fan installed in it. So you're able to manipulate the ball by pushing it and pulling it with air currents.
And one of the challenges to this is pulling is also how you collect fragments, which are an energy source that you'll use constantly in the game for your other abilities, which are shield and
Shardstorm.
If you get a full energy bar, yeah, Shardstorm, where you
which
get to basically.
Awesome.
If you ever got that one thing in Arkanoid that lets you actually shoot, it's that, but slow time down, and you have a lot more bullets.
Yeah, they put bullet time in Arkanoid.
Which sounds stupid, but it's goddamn amazing.
Oh no, you got my Max Payne in your Arkanoid. You got your Arkanoid of a Max Payne. No, it's stupid. It's stupid.
But yeah, and just with that, it works out really amazingly because you spend all this time. It's going to take you more than one level to actually build up that bar.
Mm-hmm.
And you could choose to use it as soon as you get it, or use it stupidly, or use it at the beginning of a level, or use it for something really tricky.
Or use it for a boss fight, because fuck, there are boss fights.
Yes, the boss fights are challenging. Actually, I found the second world's boss fight to be not at all challenging.
Yeah, it's not like the thing that impressed me with the boss fight is not so much like the challenge of it, the fact that they managed to make a boss fight with this style of mechanics.
Yeah, and it is a challenge.
Yeah, because again, this is just like fancy Arkanoid. This is like you basically have a fancy paddle, and they made a boss fight with it, and it's awesome. So good.
Yeah, one thing I do have to say about the boss fights, though, is I did just start playing Shatter, but the clock in World 3, I hate that motherfucker.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
One, you're playing on a circle. Two, he throws blocks at you all the time. And in one of my attempts to beat him, my shield didn't work for some reason. I'm like, oh, this block's coming at me. I'm just going to hit my shield. Didn't activate. Fuck.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing with like Shatter for me is that like it only works with the default setting is it only works with the like buttons on the right side. So like shift and control are what you use for your shield and your Shardstorm. And the way like the default setting, it only responds to the right buttons for that. Like if you use the left ones, it won't respond at all.
Yeah, I do find that a bit strange. It is a bit awkward having my keyboard like that. I'll probably change the settings to be something a little more natural.
Good. Yeah, natural. But that's probably a better word. But yeah, it was just really weird. It's all, like if I go away from Shadow for a while and try to come back, I always like instinctively go to the left side. And so then I just keep going, I was like, why the fuck isn't it working? Why the fuck isn't it working? And I remember, oh yeah, gotta go with the right one.
By the way, Deadman, look at the leaderboards for Aurora.
You're beating me?
Yep. I got beat you at like 10 million.
Well, I'll see along that line.
Which sounds like a lot, but you could easily get like a few million in bonuses.
Yeah.
The bonus stage, I like the bonus stage. Cool. You lose all your powers, so it's basically classic. But it's kind of like a little bit like Bit Trip Beat. You've got three things, like the balls that come towards you, and they collide with each other as well as your paddle. And each time you hit them, they start to move more eccentrically.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the pull power is always active with this, because they never when I'm playing, they never actually like bounce off the back wall. They always like arc back around toward the paddle.
Well, what it is it's not a pull power you control. It's a pull power that becomes gradually stronger and stronger.
It's just automatically on.
Yeah. Which becomes rather difficult when you're hitting them and they don't bounce very far away.
Yeah.
And their path of trajectories like strongly changed.
Yeah, it's hard predicting where the ball's gonna go when it's constantly bouncing off everything, including other balls.
Yeah. In the bonus level, I generally managed to rack up 1.5 to 2 million points.
Yeah, I do pretty well on those. I don't know how many points I get on average because I haven't played the game in months.
Yeah, which is probably why, you're one. Oh, well, I don't see anyone going back to Aurora to play again. Actually, it's one of the less notable worlds. Even the boss is like the octopus thing that like pretty much doesn't attack at all.
I don't even remember that.
The octopus just sort of just sits there and lets you kill it.
Oh, joy.
And it keeps growing back legs that you just end up shattering over and over again, so you get a lot of shards. So I was able to use my shard storm like 3 times on that thing.
Yeah. So anyway.
But Shatter, highly recommended. Unfortunately, the indie bundle with it has long passed if I'm playing it.
Yeah.
But definitely an enjoyable game with a very good soundtrack.
Yeah, it's still on Steam right now, I think. How much is it actually? I'm just going to look this up. But I'm guessing it's probably around like maybe $5-$10 on Steam.
Yeah, I don't see it costing very much.
$10. And you get the official soundtrack for $3, which is also on Steam.
Yeah, if I can't find my Humble Indie Bundle link, then at some point I'm buying the soundtrack, and $3 is a good price to pay for that fucking sick music.
Oh yeah, man, it's fucking awesome music.
I want it to be just like my gaming soundtrack for everything.
So we can expect, like, from now on in future videos, you're just going to edit all of the sound effects out with just that Shadow music?
You'll just hear it in the background, because I'll be playing Mass Effect and just Shatter music in the background.
It might fit Mass Effect.
Yeah, it kind of would.
Yeah, for me, it'd probably just be Hotline Miami. Just rocking out to that while I'm playing fucking Azura's Wrath. Because that would be actually really cool. Like, Hotline Miami's music is going for really heavy synth stuff over like insane violence. And it all like melds together really well. So just the anime level of violence in fucking Azura's Wrath with the heavy synth music of Hotline Miami. Someone needs to make this happen. Awesome. Please, internet.
Why don't you make this happen?
Because I don't know how to edit that. I'm bad at stuff.
Then I'll make it happen. I'll find a way to get the Hotline Miami soundtrack, and I'll download one of your Zero's Wrath videos, and there you go. Done.
Yeah, but then that'll be like, then it'll drown out the awesome orchestral music that's already in it, and everything will meld together in a horrible noise. So yeah, playing anything else then?
Yes, actually. I played Super Meat Boy, but not for long. I don't think it's a game you were meant to play for long. Notably, at the beginning it says, a gamepad is not required, but neither is bathing, so keep that in mind.
Okay, you're playing the PC version then.
Yeah. So it pretty much tells you, you should probably use a gamepad, which my adapter is somewhere. I gotta find it.
Yeah, I got the 360 version, and then, like, I got the 360 and the PC version. And so having played both of them, get a gamepad.
I have an adapter to use my 360 controllers. I gotta locate it again.
Yeah, I'm just, people out there, if you have it on PC, get a gamepad.
That's actually one of the reasons I haven't played Bit Trip Runner in a while, because I have been too goddamn lazy to go find that adapter.
Bit Trip Runner is really, you can play that with a keyboard pretty easily. I do.
Yeah, but I'm used to it on the gamepad.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've been playing, really. Okay, before I, like, completely stammer myself here, there is one thing. I have an Android game I've been playing.
Okay.
It's called Run.
Let me guess, you jump in it.
Yes, you run and jump. That's it.
I was thinking just jump, like a totally vertical game.
Now, here's the one cool part of it. You're basically running down a tunnel with gaps in it, but you can run on any of the sides and switch between them.
Okay.
So you basically got to know when to jump, when to maneuver one way, when to move another way, or when to go to another side, or... And it's really challenging, but it's fun.
Yeah, that seems to be like the thing with a lot of Android games. Like, I've been playing a couple,
but fun.
Like, I've been playing a couple of the, like, running games and stuff. Like, there was one, I think it was End of the Dead, where it's just like a first person running game where you're trying to run away from like hordes of zombies that are like in front of you. Like, there's no real goal. Or, like, I don't think there's any end game. It's just run as far as you can.
By the way, I have to say, to the developer that decided to put a Slender game on the Android, I don't know if I told you about my experience with this, but...
I don't think you did.
It would almost work, except you put the movement stick on the right and the looking stick on the left. Why?
Oh, what? Who does
that?
That
defies every instinct I have as a gamer. So I can't move in your game.
What kind of fucked up Moon Man logic does that?
And now I'm just thinking of what my character would look like with me trying to use those controls. Just trying to walk where they're looking and trying to look where they're walking.
Yeah, it's like oh my god, Slenderman's here! You try to like turn the camera away and run, but instead you end up looking down at the ground and running to the side. Yeah, I can just see that. Just crab walking while staring at your feet. Is there anything else?
I briefly played Among the Sleep, and the one thing I can say about it is you need to play it in the dark, because any amount of glare on your television is going to make it impossible to play.
Okay, pro tip. James is probably going to be doing something like that. I think he might actually have a video recorded and just waiting to put it in our mega folder.
Yeah, I haven't been doing videos of it because I knew James had dibs.
Yeah, it's the last one out. It's Survival Horror. It's his shtick. So anyway.
I might end up doing some Survival Horror, but I will always run it by him just because there's hundreds of games out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and pretty soon I'll be doing more videos. I have a fracture video I'm gonna be doing soon. So, yay! Death balls and terrain manipulation.
I don't have my headset right now, so we'll see.
Okay. So, anything else?
No. That's it for what I've been playing.
Okay, so on to me. I have some stuff. So I went on a bit of a splurge recently with video games. I got two Humble Weekly bundles, the Humble Indie bundle, and two retail games.
Wow.
Yes.
Some money bags over here.
Yeah. All for under $80.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, so let's start off with the free-to-play game I've been playing. I've been playing some more League of Legends.
All right, how are you doing at that?
So I recently played a match with Varus. He's an archer. My stats at the end of the match were 9 kills, 3 deaths, 10 assists.
Archers are generally good for assists.
Yeah, but I've been going to Mobifier and playing builds that I find on there. Just getting a build order and just going with it. And I've also been learning some things about the shop in my inventory that I didn't know. Like, if my inventory is full, I can't buy anything. Which I did not know. So it got to the point where, like, halfway, like, nearing the end of, like, the end game stuff in the build order, it got to a point where I couldn't actually buy anything. So I was, like, freaking out, like, wait, what? Why can't I buy this? Why? I need to buy this fucking death stick, and I can't. What the fuck's going on? So I eventually just went over to the League of Legends forums, and they said, your like, bag's probably full.
Noob.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so Varus was probably the guy that I played the best with in terms of actual, like, KDR stuff. Because, you know, I'm thinking like a fucking Call of Duty gamer. But I also played with Soraka, who's a healing and support class. She's just there to, like, heal and buff your, like, allies. And she doesn't really do a lot of damage. Her AS is very slow. She doesn't do a lot of damage when she does attack, and she's mainly support. And with her, I mainly just, like, hung out behind a dude and kept healing him over and over again. I got some pretty good, like, mana regen on that, so I was able to, like, heal him, like, over and over again and be able to regen my mana in a pretty decent amount of time.
Right.
And the other character I played was Rumble, which is the tiny blue rat thing in the giant robo suit, who I did not like very much. He was, like, I don't even really have to describe him. He just wasn't my kind of class. He was very melee, up close and stuff. And I don't know why I didn't like him. Which is weird, because I played like Vi earlier. I played Vi earlier, like, in a match, and I actually did pretty well with her, and I liked her. But then play as Rumble, and I'm like, no.
So we have to start playing some matches together.
Yeah. Well, then moving on to the games I actually did play. So Borderlands 2, I finally beat that.
How was it?
There's going to be a Borderlands 3. Presumably.
Okay.
So, spoiler alert for the ending of Borderlands 2. So what happens is, you go find Handsome Jack. You fight him and beat him. But he still managed to put the key into the lock and unlock the Guardian. So his thing, like, Handsome Jack's plan has been to come to Pandora, find the vault which has the Guardian in it, which is basically a giant invincible stone warrior who Jack would use to take over the planet. And so he summons him, and then you kill him by shooting him in his stone man tits.
Yep. Okay.
Yes, so then you kill him, and it was retardedly easy. Like, seriously, I had a sniper rifle in the game that, while it had no scope on it, I was still able to pull, like, crit hits, like, I pull off, like, no-scope crit hits with it, like, instantly, and I was doing, like, 5,000 points of damage each hit. And so I managed to just, so it was basically just a waiting game of waiting for him to pop out of lava and then shoot him in the chest. And so it was really easy. And then I got him to Jack, and I killed him quite brutally. And then
it's the best way.
Yeah, and then Lilith, Brick, and Mordecai showed up and said, "Hey, way to go, bro." And then they accidentally opened up this giant fucking map thing that revealed vaults on multiple planets throughout the system. So Pandora is the only place with vaults. It actually seems kind of like the natural progression of the Borderlands world, because like in Borderlands 1, there was one vault. Upon opening that vault, we learned that there are multiple vaults on Pandora. Then upon opening one of the multiple vaults, we learned there are multiple vaults throughout the universe.
So, vaults.
Yeah, so lots of vaults. Yo, bro, I heard you like vaults. So you put vaults inside your vaults. So you can vault hunt while you're vault hunting. But yeah, and also, like, going toward the end of the game, we got to learn more about Jack as a character and how he was... So before he became the president of Hyperion, he was a low-level peon. He was just some jackass who was apparently ugly as sin. Like, in one of the Echo, like, recorders we found, it was, like, Jack talking about how he was going to come to Pandora and stuff. And then his boss just walks in and is like, "Jack, what the hell are you doing, you ugly son of a bitch?" And he starts berating him. And then as we go on, we see Jack, like, start to grow in power, and he gets his new face. And then he ends up, like, horribly murdering his former boss. And we also hear him, like, talk to Angel, who, remember, is his daughter. Talk to her about the Vault Hunters from the first game. And how they were, you know, the Vault Hunters and stuff, and then how they opened up the vault and then released the Iridium, which kind of kicked off all the events that happened in Borderlands 2. And then I finished it. And I had no desire to play it anymore. Like, Borderlands 1, so with the Borderlands things, there are multiple playthroughs. And with the first game, the second I beat it, cleared out all the rest of the missions I had to clean up in the first playthrough, I then jumped immediately into the second playthrough and played through the game again. Getting to level 50 and completing every single base achievement. I 1,000-pointed the first game. Like, I didn't play any of the DLC because it was around that time that I didn't have any money. I was borrowing the game from a friend. But I 1,000-pointed that game. And then when I beat the second game, I just was like, you know, I'm done. I'm kind of done. And I don't know why. It was just, I just kind of burnt out. Which I'm wondering what happened with the second game and not the first one. It might be the difficulty. Like, before, in the, like, the first game, so each quest you do has, like, a recommended level on it. And depending on what level you are, the level, like, thing will change. So if you're, like, if the quest is really high level above you, it'll stay, like, impossible and glow red. If you're, like, a bit closer, it'll glow orange and say hard. If you get closer, it'll be green and say normal. If you're really high above it, then it'll just be gray and say, like, menial. And so before, I was able to go into hard quests and beat them with relatively little difficulty. I was able to run there, and everything would just be... while I would, like, die a couple times, I'd be able to beat the quest. But in this one, I was having more trouble with normal quests than I ever did with hard quests in the first one.
I find game ramps up the difficulty like that, it really just it increases the challenge for people who want a more challenge, and yeah, they get a more engaging game, but for some people it just puts up roadblocks and it makes your game tedious.
Yeah, that's what a lot of this game felt like. It was just going through the motions of going to a place, then shooting a bunch of guys, and then trying not to die, but then dying horribly. Like, same email about the first game, but it flew. It had a flow to it. With this one, like, literally there are enemies that stop you mid progression and just pull you backwards. Like, there are wormhole threshers where I'm just running along, and all of a sudden, fuck, I can't run forwards anymore. Then I get pulled backwards. And so it's literally impeding progress, and I did not like that at all. But yeah. Borderlands 2. I didn't like it as much as the first one, but it still had enough of what I liked about Borderlands to make it a fun game to play through once. And just once.
Just once.
Yeah. I beat the game at level 34. Yeah. It's funny because porn. Yes, yeah, so then I'm moving
on. The game is porn?
Basically. Yes, yeah, so moving on. I played another free-to-play game. I played some more Black Retribution. I played it in this mode that I hadn't played it before. It's basically Counter-Strike, where you have to get to a place to set up a bomb or defend the place that's getting the bomb set up. And if you die, then you just go into a kill cam mode and you're not able to play again until the round is over. In this mode, I got a KDR of 7.
Impressive.
For me, it is. My usual KDR is around point something. So to get a KDR of 7 is fucking fantastic. I even got to summon a giant robot. It was awesome. The robot controlled like shit. It was awesome. Well, moving on, I guess. So this is one of the games that I got as part of the Humble Weekly Bundle. I got Alan Wake.
Yes, I remember I missed that weekly bundle.
Yeah. So I've been playing through some of this game, and I find the game's design to go very much against the game's feel. So it's set to be like a survival, like a psychological action thriller type thing.
Yeah.
And so you run through the forest, which, by the way, literally every major event happens in a forest. And
that won't get old.
And you know what else won't get old? Saying, I'm not out of the woods yet. That is literally a saying he says like 3 or 4 times in the course of one forest encounter. And the forest encounters, they fucking drag. But anyway, so let me ask you a question, Bobby. Would a game that builds itself as a psychological anything have a statistic screen showing how many enemies you kill with each individual weapon and how many coffee thermoses you found?
No.
Okay, then it's not just me. Because this game, I got the feeling that it was supposed to be like some kind of like literary type thing or some kind of like Stephen King. Stephen King is a big theme in this game. And so I figured it might be something like that, where it's, you're in the woods and, shit's jumping off, but you can't really do anything about it. You just kind of have to run. But instead, you're like shining flashlights at dudes. And I spent most of my time just saying, fuck all these dudes. I need to find glowing paint and a coffee thermos. Like I'm like on autopilot for a lot of the big forest counters. Until they get to the point where they're like really kind of harrowing, because the action in the game, it doesn't necessarily flow well. Like this is the game made by the people who, popularized bullet time. And so they use that a lot. But not whenever you want it to. There are points where you're like running around, and then the enemy comes to attack you, and if you dodge just the right time, everything like slows down, so you can shoot this awesome like type movement of you ducking a dude in a hunting vest trying to slash your head with an axe. And it just feels jerky. It just feels it's a similar problem that I had with Spec Ops The Line. Where in Spec Ops The Line, every time you get a headshot, the game pauses for like half a second to show you how awesome the headshot is.
Spec Ops The Line doesn't really seem to fit.
It actually kind of does. With like Spec Ops The Line, they do that to show you like, hey, you know this awesome headshot you got? You're killing fellow Americans, you son of a bitch. It like gives you that extra half second to think like, okay, I got an awesome headshot on my fellow American. Fuck.
So I have to ask, quick aside with Spec Ops The Line, is a lot of the guilt based on the fact that you're killing Americans?
A lot of the guilt is based on the fact that you're killing people you're there to save.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if it's because you're killing Americans, I have no issue with that.
No, like, you are an American sent there to save these other Americans who were trapped in the city after a sandstorm.
Right.
And so your character camaraderie is, you know, there. That's the kind of the thing. But, you know, the fact that they're American is just kind of ancillary to the fact that, you know, you're playing an American. If you're playing Australian, these guys would be Australians.
Right.
But yeah, so anyway, back to Alan Wake. Yeah, so it's that kind of thing, but it's a lot worse because of this. The slow mode scene will take like 5 seconds. So in middle of combat, you'll just stop for 5 seconds to watch a guy in a tweed jacket and a hoodie duck under a knife. So, you know, action. Another thing that is like a game mechanic that kind of goes against the design of the game, like the feel of the game, is the manuscript pages. So the thing with the game, so the story of the game is Alan Wake is a writer. He and his wife Alice were going to the small town to try to of Bright Falls to try to just get some, like, try to get Alan past to, like, a spell of writer's block he's having. So they go out there, and then once they're out there, it turns out that there's something evil living underneath the lake that their cabin is staying on, and it kidnaps his wife. So then Alan dives into the lake after her, but then wakes up in a car accident a week later. And it turns out, during that time, he wrote a book. A book he doesn't remember writing. And a book that is detailing the events that are happening in the game. So, and one of the big things is collect the manuscript pages. Going through, find the book, and then each of the pages reveals something that's going to be happening later in the game. But here's the thing. Since the game doesn't actually know how many of the pages you'll have, what pages you'll get them in, what order stuff, it never registers with Alan Wake, never registers with Alan, that he's actually gotten these pages. So, like, there's one bit where he says, there's one bit where he picks up pages, I was almost at the woods, then I heard the chainsaw. I was like, oh, fuck, a chainsaw villain. And then you're running along, and then the chainsaw villain shows up, and Alan Wake's like, oh my god, what the hell is this? It's like, fucker, you got a page saying this would happen. You know the book predicts the future.
Oh, that is terrible.
It really is.
Because of that, I would never collect a single manuscript page. It would bug me too much.
I have to. I have a need to, okay? It comes from playing platformers all my life. I have to collect everything. Is that reason that I found every single flag in the original Assassin's Creed?
I didn't have the patience for that shit.
I got some fever, and the only prescription is collecting things. Yeah, it creates this huge disconnect between the player and the character. Like, the player, okay. This is happening. This is going to be happening. This is going to be happening soon. We know it's going to be happening because we found the fucking page. And then Alan Wake, who is the guy who actually collected the page and then is reading the page to you, doesn't know what's happening. Another thing, the game looks off. It's kind of Uncanny Valley-y.
Well, I know for one, the lip syncing isn't right.
No, lip syncing is terrible, and also the fact that no one closes their goddamn mouth.
Like, oh god, it's like a game filled with Kristen Stewart.
Exactly! Like, no matter what the scene, no matter what the circumstance, their mouths never close. Like, specifically on the main characters of Alan, Alice, and Barry. Barry is Alan's agent. And so, you'll just be hanging out, and, like, Alan just kind of sitting there, and then you'll see his mouth go, like, ah. But he's not making any sounds or talking or anything. It's just his mouth is moving. The game kind of sits very neatly in the uncanny valley for me, because this game, the thing with Remedy games is that their main characters of the games are always, like, modeled after a real person. Like, there actually is
Are they modeled well?
There's actually a live action Alan Wake. There's an actor who plays Alan Wake, the guy who's modeled after him, the guy who's like modeled, Alan Wake is modeled after, and he appears in the game. Like, there are these really great FMV sequences, which we'll talk about a bit later. But anyway, you can like tell that they're modeled after each other, but there's always something off with the character models. Like a texture on them isn't right. Like their hair looks weird. Their face is off. Their mouth never fucking closes. There's one bit where I'm pretty sure a woman's eyes flipped inside out while I was looking at her.
Ugh.
And she wasn't possessed. But yeah, while I'm ripping on this game this much, I'm still going to keep playing it because I find the story and the characters kind of interesting. Like, Alan and his wife Alice, they actually have a pretty decent relationship together. And Alice has a nice little bit to her that I can kind of relate to. She has an intense fear of the dark. And so there's one scene, like, early on in the game, I think it's in, like, chapter 2, where there's a flashback to Alan in New York with his wife, and then the lights go out, and as soon as the lights go out, she's, like, her arms, like, folded in herself, she starts, like, freaking out a little bit, and then Alan has to go, like, light a bunch of candles. There's a really nice scene of the two of them just sitting down and talking about, you know, Alice's fear of the dark and Alan trying to comfort her, and it's a very nice scene. It would have been nicer if, you know, they didn't look like they were trying to eat each other, but, you know, take what you get. And yeah, it honestly is a really interesting story, and I want to see where it goes. But I like the game in spite of itself. Like, the combat works fine if it's a bit stuttery. Like, the combat, it works fine, but it's really stuttery, and it's a little too combat intensive. Like, let's be running through the woods, and all of a sudden, oh, hey, look, dudes. I just want to go to a fucking hotel, okay? And like, the game itself, it looks okay, I guess. It does force swell, but not really much else. But the other thing is the FMV sequences. So there's a bunch of live-action video in here. Like, every once in a while, Alan will just be walking along, all of a sudden a TV will, like, explode in his face and show, like, live-action Alan Wake freaking out while he's writing the manuscript, saying, you know, I have to write the story so that I can save Alice. And then every once in a while, you find a TV that plays Night Springs, which is the greatest thing ever. It is fake Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've found two of the things so far. So what it is, you find the TV, and then, like, opens up with just a Twilight Zone-looking intro. Just blackness with a bunch of weird white dots all over it. And then it says, and then it'll do, like, some really big intro thing, eventually leading into, like, but that's just the way things are in Night Springs. And then it cuts to this insane, like, just cheesy as balls style sci-fi story. Like, the two we've seen so far, the first one was about quantum suicide. No, wait, quantum immortality. And they got into the idea of the many worlds theory, where every time you make a choice, there, like, an alternate universe is created where you made the opposite of that choice, or different choice. And so this guy, he's just, like, sitting up top, is, like, standing in front of his, like, a group of people, and he says, hey, I have invented quantum immortality. Watch this. He pulls out a gun and puts it to his head and pulls the trigger. And nothing happens. So he points the gun away from himself, pulls the trigger, and the gun goes off, showing it actually was a loaded gun. And he says that as long as they have this box thing plugged in and I'm around it, I can't die. Like, I'll create infinite universes where I'm dead, but in this one, I can't die by any action of my own. And then one of the reporters unplugs the box and he shoots himself in the head. It's like, and it just cuts to the Night Springs theme again, which
I'm guessing sounds a lot like the Twilight Zone theme.
It is so cheesy. It is so fucking just, it is some of the cheesy shit I've ever seen in a video game, and it is awesome. Like, there's this one scene that, there's another one that happens, the man in the mirror, where like, a guy's in an interrogation room for, like, brutally murdering a man, like, at a soccer game. And then it turns out that the man he murdered was himself.
What?
Yeah. Like a mirror version of this guy, like an evil version of this guy came out, murdered him, like murdered his other version, then decided to assume his life or something. And like, people like, yeah, exactly. And the cop who's interrogating him, like, the guy's just, the cop is like, I'll see you later, detective. Who knows? Maybe I'll even see you in the mirror tonight. And then just, and then like, just, there's these things that happen in Night Springs. The game has really great atmosphere. The game has really, like, cool minor things, but the major, and the story is really great, but it's the major gameplay mechanics that really turn me off from the game. I'll still keep playing it until those things become unbearable. But for now, I can see hints of why this is James's favorite game. Personally, I think it's a bit too broken, but I can see why he likes it. So yeah, then moving on to something less bleh. Little Inferno. So this is something that was part of Humble Indie Bundle 8. And it's really cool. And
explain.
I'm not... Yeah, so what this is it is a mobile game that I'm not sure was ever released on mobile devices. So basically what it is in some far-off future or in some other world where it's constantly snowing. And so everyone has to keep burning stuff. And one of the things that they, one of the things that was released by the Tomorrow Corporation, like the biggest corporation in the world, is the Little Inferno Entertainment System, which is a fireplace. And so the game is just put things in the fireplace and set them on fire. That's it.
Huh.
Everything you do is just to put, it's just to set things on fire. And then those, and the things set on fire then give you money to buy more things to set on fire. You even get tickets that let you get the things that you ordered faster. And so it has a very, mobile game type setup of you have like, so there are like 7 notebooks of things you can buy. Each of those things cost coins. You buy the thing and then it takes a certain number of seconds or minutes to get to you. Or, but you can use tickets to like pay for express shipping so they get to you faster. And the entire point of the game is to unlock all the combos in this booklet, which you have, which I did. There are 99 combos. I got them all. Yeah, the game has a very mobile game feel to it. But what's weird with it is the world they set up, which I think might actually, I think the game might actually be a satire on global warming or something. Because like what they do in the game is you just burn things. As time goes along, you start introducing new characters through notes. That's it. You don't actually, there are barely any other characters. You only introduce them through notes. And then, like, as time goes on, you start getting notes from the weatherman, who's like up above the clouds. He sees all the smokestacks, everything burning. And he's like, it's been so cold for so long. I don't know why. No one knows why, though. We haven't seen the sun in ages, and no one knows why. So keep burning stuff. That might bring the sun back or something. And knowing what I know about global warming and greenhouse effect and stuff and like all that, everything, it's kind of hilarious.
It seems to be.
It's a society that is like a society that is based around burning things that cause like horrible ash clouds to form in the sky that then block out the sun and everything to a cold, but they don't understand why everything's cold now, so they keep burning stuff. And it's really hilarious. Especially with the way they set it up. Like, everyone is... This is the entire world. The entire world is burning. That's all it is. And even if your house burns down, they still say, hey, keep burning things. Burning things is awesome. Burning is good. Like, there's even a little commercial in there for Little Inferno playset. And it's just kids standing around a fireplace burning everything. And they eventually burn their house down. And they catch themselves on fire. And they're still dancing around singing like, oh boy, Little Inferno is so much fun.
This sounds ridiculous.
And as it turns out, this thing did come out on iPad. So there's that. Actually, this was developed by the people who made World of Goo. So there's a similar artistic like vein there. But the game is not exactly deep. It's just kind of... It is burn things and oh hey look funny stuff. which can be, you know, a bit of a turnoff for some people. Like, I beat the game and I got everything in it. And let me check what my final playtime was on Steam. I got it all in 3 hours. I unlocked all the booklets. I bought everything and burned everything in each of those booklets, and I got unlocked every single combo in 3 hours. So the game's not exactly meaty. But while it does last, it's still fun. And this seems like the kind of game that would be best played on an iPad. You know, you're bored, like on the bus, might as well set some things on fire. Then as the bus driver tells you to stop, you can just pull your iPad and start playing Little Inferno.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, so I'm pleased that this was part of the Humble Indie Bundle. It was a fun little game while it lasted. Another game that was part of the Humble Indie Bundle, Thomas Was Alone. This game is weird and also really cool. So it is a platformer where you play as a brick.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like an actual brick. I'm talking about just like a brick-shaped layer of pixels, and that's it. You don't talk. You don't really do anything. You just move and jump. And as time goes on, you start being introduced to more bricks of various shapes and sizes, each of them with their own kind of unique like properties. Like Thomas is the one who's able to like jump the highest, like jump the farthest and stuff, and he's the best jumper. He's the first guy. And then there is, I think, Chris, who is smaller than Thomas and can't jump as far, but he can get into tighter spaces. And then there is this other one. I can't remember his name, but he is the tallest of them all. He is able to jump the highest, but he's also the skinniest, so he's able to drop down into smaller areas. And that's what I've gotten into so far. And it's just get all of your blocks to the end and get them in their each individual circles, and then you'll be good. And that's how the game goes. And at the beginning of each level, you're given like this little narrative intro, like given this little narrative paragraph read by some guy who sounds like Wheatley. I can't remember that guy's name.
Stephen Merchant?
Stephen Merchant, yeah. A guy who sounds a lot like Stephen Merchant. Just giving you the story and giving you like character motivation and development for these blocks. And it's oddly really engaging. Like the world is just one color background, black stuff, and then your blocks. And yet it's really engaging. And if it goes the way that I think it's going, thanks to Greg Carter and Corey Rydell from Critical Miss, I'm really going to like this game. Like, go back, like, for anyone who don't know what I'm talking about, go over to The Escapist and check out their Game of the Year 2012 comics. They have Thomas Was Alone in there, and it's really cool. Let's move on to the big games that I got. Far Cry 3. Oh my god, this is so much fun. This is like Skyrim with everything that I didn't like about Skyrim taken out and replaced with awesome.
Considering Far Cry 3 now, explain.
So, Far Cry 3, the story behind it is you are playing as Jason Brody. He is exactly the kind of person you think he is. So Jason and his brothers, Grant and Riley, and their friends, Keith, Oliver, Lisa, and Daisy, all of them go to an island to celebrate Jason's brother, Riley, getting his pilot's license. I believe it was Riley who got his pilot's license. So one of them got their pilot license. And so, you know, they're hanging out, and they are just drinking, they're doing horrible things. Like, the entire opening of the video of the game is just like a cut through video of these guys just being assholes while like Paper Planes by MIA plays in the background. That's that, for those who don't know, that's that song from the Pineapple Express trailer with like the gun sounds in it. And they are just the most asshole people ever. Like, these are the kind of people that I despise. And then it pulls back. It turns out that was just a video on a cell phone, and all of your friends have been kidnapped by pirates and are about to be sold to slavery.
Huh.
So props to them for dealing with these characters, but I wanted that to happen to them. And then we meet Voss, who is fucking awesome. He is like the second in command of the pirates. He's the guy like in charge. He's the guy who like runs the daily operations of slave trade stuff, and he is amazing. Like his intro, I can't even put into words how amazing his intro is. He says the phrase pussy trigger.
Hard to argue with pussy trigger.
It is awesome. And so, yeah, then so what happens is you, your brother, Grant, he helps you escape because he was in the military or something. And they get shot in the face and dies in your arms. Then you have to run into the jungle, and then you are picked up by this guy named Dennis, who is like some, I don't know, maybe like African style hipster guy, who then gives you this magical tattoo. I'm not even kidding; it's actually a magical tattoo. And then you have to help the like natives of the island start a rebellion against Voss and his pirate crew and save your friends. And so that is the game. That it is just you. It's just you as Jason Brody, some asshole fucking guy with spiked hair and a pop collar polo shirt, having a magical arm tattoo and using thousands of guns to kill, like the hordes of pirates to save your friends from being sold to slavery.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so as the game progresses, you like start to get the idea that kind of Jason is kind of enjoying things. Like there's this one scene where you save your like your girlfriend, I think, Lisa, from being burnt alive. And then you jump into a car, and as you're going through the car, you pick up a grenade launcher and start blowing up fucking pirates who are chasing you in cars. And the entire time Jason's like, "Fuck yeah, this is awesome." And then he like jumps to the front seat, breaks out the window, starts shooting dudes, and it was like, and then, like he finally finished and everything's like, "Oh man, this is so great. I fucking love that." And Lisa's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, dude? We almost died." I was like, "Oh, sorry. I was shooting dudes. It's fun." And that's what I understand this game to be. It's just Jason going along and slowly like descending into madness of just like fully embracing the insanity and just fucking horribleness that happens on this island and embracing it like wholeheartedly. Like there's this one scene where I'm trailing a guy, and I walk past a hooker being beaten by her pimp, and I don't give a fuck. It's just something that you hear in the background, and Jason is fully aware of this, and you don't do anything. You don't even care about it, which you think would be something that he'd actually care about or comment on, but nope, it's just a hooker being beaten by her pimp. Moving on. It's all little background stuff in this game that really helps like sell me on this game. It's really great. And so what did I mean when I said this game is Skyrim but awesome? So this game is very much like Skyrim style. There are side quests everywhere. There are like different factions they have to help out. There's a fast travel system. There are like multiple like villages and safe houses you gotta get to. And everything, so some stuff I didn't like about Skyrim. The fact that your movement speed when you just walk around is shit. When you walk, you're shit. And when you're on a horse, it's shit. In this, when you walk around, you are able to sprint. You're able to sprint at like a really well pace for a really long time, and you're able to move around the island relatively well. And when you get into a car, the cars handle like their tires are made of ice, but it's awesome. So, like, you just jump into a Jeep.
So they handle like video game cars.
Yeah, they handle like video game cars. And the entire thing is first person. So you never leave the first person perspective. And so just a scene of first person driving a car off a cliff and then crashing it, like seeing the windshield break up. Like, then you get out of the car, you're on fire. So then there's actually a mechanic for the heal button is you actually just see when you're on fire, you just actually see yourself patting out the fire that is on your arm and then having no visible wound from it. And there's also like a hang glider system. There is so much great stuff that actually makes movement around the island feel good, unlike Skyrim.
Okay.
Then there's also the fact that you have guns and the combat is fast paced and really engaging. There's actually kind of a stealth element to it. You're able to equip silencers on a lot of your guns. You have a bow and arrow, which is fucking fantastic. Like, the bow and arrow actually requires a lot of skill for it. And at one point, I hit a target 80 meters away. with a bow and arrow and got an achievement for it. And so it's like doing all this. The stealth actually requires some skill. And if they see, and if an enemy sees you, you have to actually work to get the enemy to lose track of you.
Okay, yeah. In Skyrim, it's broken. Once you level up as high as you can literally just crouch in front of somebody and they've lost track of where you are.
Yeah, with this, enemies, they'll like catch on to you relatively quickly, but you're able to evade them relatively quickly. But if they see you, you will have to actually work pretty hard to get away from them. Like, there's one mission that I was doing where I had to like sneak up and kill a guy, but then one of the snipers saw me. So then I ended up like running like 500 meters in the opposite direction trying to get away from them. Yeah, and then there's also a crafting system where you craft like health syringes, combat syringes, hunting syringes, because there's a hunting system in this too. Then you also craft like your ammo, you craft your holsters so they carry multiple weapons. You craft everything. And it honestly does take some skill. Like there are certain areas marked on your map where there are like guys, like animals you can hunt. But you actually have to like look around the area where it's happening to actually find them. And then you actually have to kill them. And some of them are pretty hard. Like trying to kill a black bear, they can take like 3 shotgun shots to the face at point blank range and still keep coming. And then don't even get me started on hunting sharks. Because you hunt sharks.
That sounds like it would be a pain.
From the shore with a bow and arrow. I've killed 3 sharks like that. There's outspin around the water. I tag them. Then I'm just fucking on the shore, firing arrows at them, and I killed like 3 of them. And it's especially bullshit because they usually swim around in packs. So I kill one, swim out to him, dive underwater, start skinning him, and then another shark just jumps up on me. So I start matching
fucking the sharks, man.
Yeah, it was especially great with crocodiles because crocodiles, I don't believe they show up on your map. So there's one point where I was just walking into an area. I was like, okay, there's like something in here I gotta get. Walking in, and all of a sudden, oh, fuck, a crocodile! So it was just me mashing the B button to stab him in the eye with my knife. And then the body just disappeared. I couldn't skin him. And it sucked. It was awesome. I goddamn love this game. This is a really fantastic game, even if on the 360 there are a bunch of technical issues. Like the fact that the frame rate chugs like a son of a bitch. Like textures pop in. Entire models pop in. But it's not like the regular pop in where just like everything's all blurry then it fades in. It's like everything is white and then like a black checkerboard pattern sweeps over it revealing the texture.
Wow, that is some popping.
Yeah, that is some popping, but it looks awesome when it does it. This game is so much damn fun. Like seriously, if anyone who doesn't have this game, I highly recommend it. It is a really great game. It's got really great shooting and stuff in it. It's got a really great storyline. It's got a really great framework. And there's also some Assassin's Creed to it because around the island, there are radio towers you actually have to climb and activate again in order to reveal new sections of the island and figure out, you know, where enemy strongholds are, where like quests are, where hunting areas are. And it is fun. Just climbing these towers and getting to the top, and then you actually get like a whole... You actually get like a whole like sweeping around the radio tower thing, showing off key areas before zooming back to it. It's basically just sync points in Assassin's Creed, and it's really fun. And then you zip line down to it, and then you shoot a fucking tiger in the face. And steal a car and run over 12 dudes before crashing into a tree. It's so good.
Yeah, it sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah. Then we move on to my final game, DMC Devil May Cry.
Yeah, I was actually looking at your Steam listing. I noticed you got it.
Yeah, I got that on Steam. And I want a controller that I want a wireless gaming receiver that I can hook up a computer so I can play it with my controller.
They're pretty cheap on, like, eBay.
Yeah, but then they also take, like, 4 weeks to get here. But anyway. So, yeah, DMC. I am probably reading way too much of something that isn't there. But I'm getting really weird Oedipal undertones to this game. Like, especially in the first sequence. So for those who don't know the story...
What?
Oedipal, like Oedipus complex. Because okay. Dante, in any scene we see him having sex, he's having sex with people dressed up as angels. His mother was an angel. That's pretty much the only thing he remembered about her. Because before before mission 3, Dante doesn't really know anything about like his family. But anytime we see him flashback to his mom giving him his necklace, she has giant angel wings. And they get a lot of sex scenes of him, and there is angel wings everywhere. I may just be looking at this thing a different way than any other people, but but anyway, in terms of the actual game, it is really fun. So for those who don't know, this is the remake of Devil May Cry, which people got all in a tizzy about because, you know, oh, Dante doesn't have white hair.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they actually do address that in the game by having a scene where a white wig falls on Dante's head. He looks in the mirror and says, not in a million years. So basically, Capcom giving a fuck you to anyone who was pissed off by the look. Yeah, they get the actual gameplay, and there's a lot to it, but it's not entirely, you know, it's very accessible, even though there's a lot to it. So you have, you know, your standard stuff with like your sword rebellion, your guns ebony and ivory, but then you also have angel and demon weapons, since, you know, your parents in this game are an angel and a demon. So then you have your giant fucking demon axe, which deals heavy attacks, good for shield and stuff. And you're also able to use that to rip enemies toward you and like rip their shields off. And then you have your angel weapons, which is a giant scythe, which is good for like quick group attacks and pulls you toward enemies. And there are also enemies like various effects where they're only affected by, you know, angel weapons or demon weapons. And yeah, you're able to, like, I was able to get into this game and there's a combo meter to it. I was able to pull off like S ranks pretty much no problem. But there's also triple S ranks, so I probably not doing that great.
It's always so hard to know.
Yeah.
Well, you do know, I guess. You're not pulling off triple S.
You're not pulling off
triple
S.
Why do you have S and then triple S? Like,
because it's they want the announcer guy to go tss, because it's actually an announcer guy like announcing all your things. And so once you get an S rank, he goes savage. And then, you know, you get to the next one, he says something else. I don't know what it is. And you get to the next one, he says something else. And presumably, he stresses the S on each one, like, more and more. So, anyway. Yes, this game is... This game is fun. I said that, but... The combo system is very accessible, and the environment design is amazing. Like, the big conceit with this thing is that instead of just having the demons running around in the real world, which they are... But they're all disguised and stuff. But in order to access them, you go into Limbo, which is, you know, like the subdimension. Once you go in there, everything gets really weird. Like it'll go from like a regular warehouse. Like a regular warehouse will turn from that into a floating void inside of a giant like pop bottle that has platforms floating everywhere and the environment telling you to go fuck yourself. Like literally.
Well, that's polite.
Yeah. And so, the environment design is really well done. It's really creative, and they're able to pull off a lot of really cool stuff. And the thing is, since I'm on PC, I have the game running at ultra settings, and it's still running at 60 frames a second.
Sweet.
Yeah, so my system, it's not exactly... It's a pretty good system, but it's not exactly top of the line. So being able to run a game that came out within like the past few months on ultra settings and have it run at 60, it's kind of awesome for me. But yeah, so anyway, like the story of this game is kind of They Live-y. You know, that Roddy Piper movie. So what's happening is the demons have taken over the world through debt and soda.
Basically. Soda.
Yeah, virility. The world's like most popular soda drink, which actually has some kind of weird psychotropic drug in it that causes humanity to get like just get us very complacent and very obese. Because obesity is because of demons. Yeah. Yeah, and so you are playing as, you know, Dante, who recently met up with his twin, long-lost twin brother, Virgil, who is the leader of basically a... Basically, if Occupy Wall Street was run by V. And so, yeah, okay. So these guys are against the demons. They're trying to stop everyone from doing all this bullshit. And Dante is the key, apparently, for some reason. I don't entirely know why. I don't know why Virgil couldn't have done this. I don't know why no one's trying to kill Virgil. Because everyone's saying that, oh, hey, the Nephilim, the son of, like, the offspring of an angel and a demon, which isn't what a Nephilim is. It's the offspring of an angel and a human. But whatever. I was like, oh, the Nephilim, we want to stop the Nephilim, the son of Sparta, Dante. But I'm like, Virgil, he's also Nephilim, also the son of Sparta. Why aren't you trying to kill him? It's like, fuck him, Dante! Like, I'm always the one who gets pulled into limbo. I'm always the one that all the bad guys see in the cameras that want to kill me. I'm always the one who gets attacked by every demon, and Virgil's kind of there. In his stupid coat with his blue Nazi armband.
Virgil doesn't have protagonist powers.
He has a magic sword given to him by the King of Demons. Like me.
Protagonist.
Anyway, yeah. So the They Live story is actually really cool. I really do like that. Like, I love They Live. And seeing it taken on, like, in this way is kind of cool. And I gotta say, like, Dante as a character, he's a dick. That's what I've come to understand.
I thought there was a second part to that statement, but no.
He's a dick. He's a dick. And Dante from the old games was a dick.
So he's still a dick.
Yeah, but now he's a dick with black hair, so I guess that's wrong. Yeah, like, while he is a dick, he's a fun dick. He's the kind of dick that you would hang out with just to see what he does. Like, there's actually a bit where he just gets into a fuck you match with a demon. Which is hilarious. It's like they go in... It's at the scene where they go into basically the Slurm factory from Futurama, which I'm not even kidding. Like, Slurm in the Futurama world is created by, like, the weird fluids coming out of, like, the worm, like a giant worm's ass, and this is coming out of a succubus's ass. Which, by the way, a succubus is a sex demon.
Yes.
This succubus is 10 times the size of a normal person, probably bigger, with four eyes, a giant bulbous head, and like a giant sack covering most of her body.
How is that a succubus?
Don't you just want to fuck that? Yeah. So this is the person you get into the fuck you match with. Like, they'll come along and start talking to she'll make fun of you. It's like, oh, the son of Sparta and Ava the whore. And then Dante's like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you! And she just, every time you, like, do damage to her, she starts giving this, like, really over-the-top thing, like, I'm gonna rip off every one of your limbs and shit in all the holes, then eat your corpse.
It's the Yummy!
It's the most over-the-top insane shit while Tech Step is playing in the background. This game has a very, like, balls-to-the-wall, just going fucking all-out action tile thing that I am a huge fan of. And they usually, like, intercut this with, you know, the quieter moments in the real world. But when it's on, it's fucking on, and it's really cool. And I can't wait to get the part where I fight giant Bill O'Reilly. Because, by the way, Bill O'Reilly's in this, but not really. It's Bob Barbas in this world. He just, like, he's some guy I think worked with the demons. You fight him inside the computer where he's basically the master control program from Tron. It's gonna be fucking okay. Cool, this game is really cool, and a lot of the coolness comes from, like, the visual style of it and everything that happens in it, which is kind of hard to get across in terms of words.
Yeah, the visual style is like that. It's very hard to just say it.
Yeah, but If you get a chance, pick this game up. I'm not sure if it is still on sale. Probably not, but let me just check here on Steam. Yes, it is no longer on sale. But, you know, it's still up, $50 on Steam. I would definitely recommend this game. It is, like, even on PC with, like, you know, like, what PC controls are for this type of game, it still controls really well. Like the movement feels like fine enough. The platforming is a bit janky, but that's par for the course for these kind of games. Like DMC, I remember, like the original Devil May Cry, I remember the platforming being shit. Like the jumping was really weird. You're only able to double jump at certain points, and you, like, sometimes you double jump, sometimes you run up a wall, and it was all just all kinds of horrible. And this one, the jumping isn't great, but they managed to like dissuade a lot of that stuff by having a, you know, really decent like in-air movement mechanic, a way of moving the platforms around to help you better like jump around stuff. And it's just a fun game with also an awesome, pretty awesome soundtrack.
Okay.
There's a lot of heavy metal and tech step.
We've heard a lot of there's an awesome soundtrack tonight.
Yeah. But yeah, so DMC, check it out. It's awesome. I love it. I really like it. Well, I don't love it. I really like it at this point. So that is what we're playing then. On to news. So Microsoft, during their big reveal of the Xbox One, they kind of didn't go into some things that had been rumored around the internet, such as the, you know, the system's permanent internet connection and the fee for used games. Microsoft has since come out and clarified these things that may be happening. So according to sources at Polygon, the Xbox One will not require a constant internet connection, but it will be required to connect to the internet once a day, like once every 24 hours or so, for an authenticity check. Basically, this is just a way for Microsoft to make sure you're not pirating games. Because each game will be having a like encryption code built into the disk, which will then authenticate itself on the Xbox One's hard drive. This authentication code will be checked every 24 hours in the connection and the regular check. And because of this, people would think, oh, hey, this means that, you know, the game will actually be tied to your thing, so you won't be able to give it to other people. Not true. So if you sell the game or lend it to a friend, the code will deauthenticate itself on your hard drive and then authenticate itself on the other hard drive. When you bring the game back onto your console, it'll just authenticate itself again on the hard drive. So you're able to, and this will all be done completely free to the user, so there'll be no fee.
So that's one thing that was said to be bad about the Xbox One that isn't quite as bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so used games will still be a thing in the next console generation. From what, like, based on all the news that we've heard from everything, there will still be used games next generation. Which is, you know, a good thing. And the constant internet checks are retarded.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, like, if for example, like, your internet goes out for a little while, and you just happen to be, like, at the time that you need to get the connection check, you cannot play your Xbox until your internet comes back online. The only people who will be, like, immune to this, I guess, will be active duty soldiers, because a code may be given to them that exempts the system from the online checks for active duty soldiers who are in internet-free zones, like, you know, their base camps or something. But it's not a good idea for anyone at all.
Yeah, not everyone has good internet, and some people don't have internet at all. Some people have unreliable internet, which might die for a couple days.
Mm-hmm. So, people out there with shitty internet, if you're listening to this, congratulations on finding this. Thank you. And also, get the PS4. The PS4 does not require an internet connection at all. So, yay.
Yay!
Yeah, everything that we've been hearing, I am firmly in the PS4 camp.
Pretty much. I've never had much brand loyalty.
Yeah, I just got the Xbox 360 because it was the cheapest. And, of course, the day after I bought the Xbox 360 that I got, the next tier up model, with, like, twice the hard drive space and, you know, more stuff with it, dropped down to the price of this one, and the model I got was discontinued. But anyway, moving on to our next piece of news. The third Yeah, third, I think, DLC character for Injustice Gods Among Us has been announced. It's Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, because that's who we want in Injustice Gods Among Us. A Mortal Kombat character.
I do. I want to see him fucking cut Superman's head off. Because hopefully he'll have a fatality. But yeah, Scorpion is kind of Ed Boon's favorite. So, you know, hey, put him in there. And so Scorpion for this game has been redesigned by DC's Jim Lee, which is awesome because Jim Lee's an amazing artist. And the new Scorpion, from the looks of things, like from the sounds of things, he is supposed to be like some homage to, you know, NetherRealm's work on the Mortal Kombat series and stuff. And yeah, so he's gonna be coming. Not sure when. Doesn't say on here. But yeah, so Scorpion is gonna be $5 on the, like, $5 or 400 Microsoft points. It's up on, depending on your platform. And I believe he's included in the season pass, which is $15, which gets you 4 characters for $15, and also 3 character skins for I think it's Wonder Woman, Deathstroke, and the Flash. I think Batman. Wait, they're their Flashpoint costumes, basically. Yeah. Moving on to our next piece of news. EA, in a move that shocked everybody, is not only abandoning season pass, abandoning online passes for all future games, but retroactively removing online passes from their older titles. Yes.
Good job, EA.
Yes, for those who don't know, EA was one of the companies that kind of, they were at the forefront of the war against used games. And the way that they were doing this was with the online pass. So basically, if you bought the game new, then a little code would be included in the game that when inputted would let you access the online features. If you bought the game used, then you would not be able to access any of the online features or a good chunk of the other content unless you paid an additional $10. This was their, like, Project $10 thing. This is included in games like Mass Effect 2, Medal of Honor, Dragon Age 2, and basically all of their EA Sports titles. So EA announced a few weeks back that they would be abandoning online passes in every future game they'd be releasing. And then just recently... say what you will.
This is cool. That's all I have to say is this is, mm-hmm. This is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they announced that they'd be also, well, actually, so this thing was announced, this thing was revealed by, I believe, NeoGAF user Vert Boyle, who saw that there was less DLC or something. It's some weird thing that happened, but it was just, yeah, they announced that, hey, guess what? We're not dicks anymore. Well, not as big dicks anymore. And then just recently,
EA still does some things.
Yeah, Origin.
Like DLC just, that's required for the experience of the game.
Capcom does that too. They sold the real ending of Azura's Wrath as DLC. But anyway, so then EA, just to continue to be smaller dicks than usual, they actually announced that they'd be going back to all of their old titles and removing the need to have online passes. So John Riesberg from EA's corporate communications department recently spoke with Game Informer, and said, quote, "As we discontinue online pass from our new EA titles, we're also in the process of eliminating it from all our existing EA titles as well. We heard the feedback from players and decided to do away with the online pass altogether. Players will see it first with some EA Sports titles, where a prompt to enter an online pass code will no longer appear in-game. And other titles will simply make online passes available free of charge online. These are rolling updates that are taking effect over the next several weeks. We hope players continue to enjoy our games and online services for a long time to come." So, props to you, EA. You did something, not dick.
You're learning!
Yeah! Now, here's the next thing you should learn. Games don't have to be $60. Just throwing that out there.
In fact, you'd make more money with slightly cheaper games if they were $40.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd see a 19% increase in profit, according to two professors from the New York University of something and the Toronto University of something. So professors did math and said, hey, charge less, you make more. So moving on to our next piece of news. So on the E3 website, an entry for The Last Guardian appeared. So for those who don't know, The Last Guardian was announced as the next project from like Team Ico, like back in 2011. Wait, no, actually 2009. Fuck.
It's been a while.
It's a bit. And so yeah, the game has been teased and canceled and not canceled and announced that it was on hiatus and then announced that it was on hiatus. It was still being developed. And it was just, it's been a whole shit show with this game. But on the E3 Insider, the convention's official news website, a listing for the game appeared and said that they would be showing off some new screenshots and videos on July 11th when E3 2013 begins. So the entry I'm read in full. Check out the latest screenshots and videos for The Last Guardian. Then come back here on Tuesday, June 11th, for all the latest details straight from E3 for the E3 2013 convention floor. And yeah, so the screenshots they have up there currently are old screenshots. But
okay, so there will be new ones later.
Presumably, but apparently, a Sony spokesperson told Polygon that, I'm afraid the listing is purely speculative.
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. Does that mean that Sony isn't sure if they'll be showing off the game at E3? I don't know. Things are weird right now. But anyway, there is hope that the game isn't dead. That I might be able to play it and then watch the giant fucking dog bird thing die a horribly tragic death. This Team Ico, fuck you. Yeah.
Now I'm even more confused.
Team Ico, they are the guys who made like Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. And they're known for apparently making really depressing games.
So anyway, okay then.
Moving on to our final piece of news. On the Telltale Games Twitter, a Vine video was posted showing some things about the next Walking Dead game. It has a character named Vince. That is all.
Okay.
It's like there's not much you can show in a Vine video, considering the Vine videos are 8 seconds long.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's something.
I really hope in the next game you play as Clementine.
Yeah, there is, like, in the Vine video, there is a picture of, like, the picture they show of Vince. There is a person behind him who, wait, no, that isn't Clementine at all. Sorry, I don't know why I was thinking that. But yeah, so there'll be a character named Vince involved in a big way.
Woo!
So those are for news, then. On to new releases. So for this week, the week of June 3rd, we have Scrolls coming out for the PC. Gunpoint also coming out for the PC. They will have Remember Me, which comes out on the 360, PS3, and PC. The retail copy of Minecraft for Xbox 360. So the disc version. And a game called Oregon Trail. No idea what it is, but it sounds cool. Organs.
I could say for people who get the disc version of Minecraft, there's not much point, because you're going to have to download updates over and over and over and over again anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then moving on to next week, the week of June 10th or something, whatever, I don't fucking care. So coming up next week, we have Animal Crossing New Leaf for the Brick of Shit, SimCity for the Mac, and The Last of Us for the PS3. I know. I know, dude. It's It's heartbreaking. It's tragic. We don't have the PS3 to play that goddamn game.
Why does it have to be PS3?
Because Naughty Dog.
Boo.
Go multi-platform, Naughty Dog, please. It's been so long since I played your games.
Everybody should be multi-platform.
It's just
the best way.
I can understand the need for exclusives. But anyway, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you all for joining us. It is a week. That's new release then done for games, right?
Yep.
Okay. So thank you all for joining us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us at DeathStoreProds. I am a Deadman or DeathStoreProds, and we have at Bovion. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/DeathStoreProds. Subscribe to us on YouTube at YouTube.com/DeathStoreProds, Vince for myself, and YouTube.com/Bovion for Bovion. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some reviews, let us know what you want to see more of, etc. We are on Stitcher, you can download the app, check us out on there. And we are on DeviantArt, so go to deathstoreprods.deviantart.com for stuff. This week on the website, we're going to be having the anime podcast this Thursday, as well as the final anime club for Angel Beats. We take a look at episodes 11, 12, and 13. Then we'll be kicking off Bad Remake Month this Friday by taking a look at the Total Recall remake.
Dubstep yell!
Dubstep Bryan Cranston. Then, on Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, we'll be having the Anything Cast live. Please join us at allgames.com/chat. We'd love to hear from you guys and think about what we're doing with the website and everything. Then, comics next Wednesday, movies next Friday, as well as the commentary track for Planet of the Apes, as well as new anime club for a new series. And E3 starts next week.
Yay.
I'm being totally goddamn serious here. I need you and the new lady's help with this, or otherwise I will die.
I will try.
I need some... You don't know how stressful E3 can be. The Gelatinous Ender and I barely managed to cover it last year. You need help. I need help. So many press conferences. Usher won't be here to save me this year with his total non-need to exist in that press conference. So be sure to check out our probably horrible coverage of E3 next week. God. E3 fucking snuck up on me this year, man. It was just like, oh, hey, E3's here. Fuck.
Shit.
Yep. So, until all that stuff, I'm the Deadman.
I'm Bovion, and I found the soundtrack.